fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Spawn into the Sega Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
Or by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here.
Wanting to bleed on me?
I'm invisible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Conversation with Eagle for this 17th day of January, 2024. And another half moon today. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. As always, I like to remind everyone that we do come from far and wide, from around this world, from many cultures, creeds, and nationalities. And we all come to this table of life to learn from and with each other in the best possible way. We acknowledge that no race, no person is better than another. We all experience this gift of life from our mutual creator. Again, thank you for listening to Revolution Radio and supporting us here, as we are a listener-supported station. And I always like to remind you to check out the nav bar for our schedules for our studios, as well as the archives, which are loaded with lots of various presentations and from numbers past, as well as clicking on that donation button. We always like to know that you are listening to us and are able to support us. As always, I like to give a special shout out to all of the chatters here at Revolution Radio. And today I want to do a special shout out to Captain Fred. Yesterday was his final show, we found out, at Revolution Radio. And I'm sorry to see him go, along with others who have recently left. I was deeply touched with Captain Fred's special recognition of the Conversations with Eagle Flower presentations and their content. For many years, I have said that if a UFO comes down, take me away, I had better know the driver. And Captain Fred certainly qualifies. And maybe we'll meet up along the way on our unique paths of life. In the meantime, best to you, Captain Fred. You may be gone, but you're not forgotten. And I'm sure I speak on behalf of many. As always, I like to mention my contact information is my email, which is eagleflower8@gmail.com. eagleflower8@gmail.com. My Eagle Flower saying is, let's learn together and build our best future with clarity, strength, unity, and wisdom. Thank you, mate. It's nice to get a recognition. Today's theme is our options, playing our own tune. I'm going to start with a quick salute to Martin Luther King Jr. with a thought-provoking quote taken from Strength to Love, written or published in 1963, which is a collection of his sermons that explore his commitment to justice, equality, and God. And here is a brief quote. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. End quote. And I came across a very timely quote also by Martin Luther King Jr. that, frankly, it sounds as if he said it yesterday. And this is taken from The Three Evils of Society, published in 1967. And so the collision course is set. The people cry for freedom, and the Congress attempts to legislate repression. Millions, yes, billions, are appropriated for mass murder. But the most meager pittance of foreign aid for international development is crushed in the surge of reaction. Unemployment rages at a major depression level in the black ghettos, but the bipartisan response is an anti-riot bill rather than a poverty program, end quote. Does that ring any bells for you? Do you get hearing the echoes back in the 60s? What goes around comes around until we realize the same needs that we use for centuries and much longer. Until we realize that as long as we react, we continue to play their game in their arena. Until we figure out our own path and get out of their box. What is our opportunity? We hear incessant screeching pandemonium and threats of violence and doom. This frenzy quickens with each shallow breath that we take, gasping for air, for clarity and sanity. We tend to lose whatever balance and stasis that we have known. The pace quickens. The plots unfurl. We become mesmerized. What can we do? We are told to believe, to hope, to trust that all will be well. Does this scenario sound all too familiar? Some become so disenfranchised that words of encouragement only signal to them as being more poppycock, like frosting on a pile of turds. One becomes cynical and very disparaged. Once again, the world of extremes raises its ugly head. Without our realizing it, we self-censor in ways that are not obvious to ourselves. We refrain from verbalizing our true thoughts with consistent pummeling from those who wish to foster control of our words and actions. we rapidly confine ourselves into a corner. Then we may come out with so much pent-up anger, we challenge directives in less than civilized ways. We may end up acting out in the very ways that we so disapprove of. And this is another example of force upon us and our reaction. Meanwhile, as we fester and fume, we lose patience, calmness, and clear-mindedness. Thus continues this deepening spiral of venom, anger, hatred, and feelings of doom. We end up becoming the same savages that we initially contested. How is it possible to extricate ourselves out of this mess? Is it possible? Intensity and speed ramping up. We are creatures of habit. At least that is how we now see ourselves. Is it our true nature? One can see both sides. What does our present situation show us? Right now, we mostly experience uncertainty. Patterns of life that we are familiar with are changing. At least that seems to be what is happening. To make matters worse, we are so entrained with fear of the unknown that change of any sort is considered a threat. Stress level needs to climb. Bunker mentality becomes the rule of the day. Us against them is the new golden rule, while fighting and reacting, whether mentally, emotionally, and physically. What can we learn from these increasing tensions? Or are we going to submit to the cacophony and tempo of doom? How can we step aside and let these unexpected threats pass by? Why give them speed, energy, and strengthened trajectory? For those who pride themselves as being astute to the ways of the world, they now falter. Challenges and threats come looming ever faster from directions that are unexpected. Yet later, a pattern of these unexpected threats unveils. How can we change what seemingly is slipping through our fingers into nothingness? Choices. We always have choices. What might be? It is often repeated these days that we are in the times of biblical sifting of wheat. Yes, the sifting from the chaff. This is a simple metaphor that describes how each of us decides which direction we want to take. Are there only opposites or extremes? That either or polarity? Soon we will find out, it does seem. Some remind us that the unknown, the void, is filled with potential. What can be ascertained from this statement? We might also remind ourselves that from this void, this potential, evolve the various levels or dimensions down to this physical world. Vibration, frequency, combine with that elusive consciousness, the awareness of I am. Cycles within cycles, far grander than our little brains can comprehend. And through all of this magnanimity comes our innate and gnosis of life, our sentience, our reflectiveness, our many abilities and talents. All illustrate the beauty of life. This stage of awakening that humanity finds itself opens the gate to rising on an upward path, much as the Hopi have described. Is it an all or nothing challenge that all must rise to a singular path at the same time? I do not know. Or maybe we peer with our tinted glasses that include the illusion of time and space. Is it quite possible that now, for some just becoming aware, others of us forge a path for these others to follow? Are some of us clearing the way while others quietly brighten the way? With so much tension and strife looming around and within, it becomes imperative that we search for our natural beauty, our relationship with all divinely created. Simplicity is the word for today. Last week's theme of imagination illustrated how we can use it to our greater advantage for ongoing growth, or to become embroiled in spinning, getting nowhere. There comes a time, or many times, when we are challenged from deep inside. Are we willing to uncover the deep wounds, the heavy malaise that holds us down? Each of us comes to these intersecting nodes on our life journeys. Is it your time and place to now begin or to continue in this arduous self-examination? Remember that being willing to pursue such a life-changing moment takes commitment, acceptance, curiosity, and trust. Above all, it is not a race to a goal or predetermined ending. The first thing to set aside is that mindset of maintaining control, of dogged determination, stubbornness. Learning how to delve into unknown territory while reaching out to connect with your true inner self becomes the greatest reward and learning experience that never ends. The proper use of our free will enlightens, expands, and carries us to previously unknown territories. Free will can be a burden tying us in knots, or the basis of experiencing our limitless potentials. And today we will explore how others addressed and came to realize this moment of choice, that moment. And I'm going to start with a very short little story, and it's called A Lake to Drink. Let me pull that up. The title of it is When the Lake Seems Too Big to Swallow, and this is taken from PurposeFocusCommitment.com. Once upon a time, there was a woman who had been lost in the desert for 3 whole days without water. And just as she was about to collapse, she saw what appeared to be a lake just a few hundred yards in front of her. Could it be? Or is it just a mirage? She thought. With the last bit of strength she could muster, she stepped toward the lake and quickly learned that her prayers had been answered. It was no mirage. Indeed, it was a large lake full of fresh water. There was more water than she could ever drink in her lifetime. Yet, while she was literally dying of thirst, she couldn't bring herself to drink the water. She simply stood by the water's edge and stared down at it. And along came a passerby riding on a camel from a nearby desert town who was watching the woman's bizarre behavior. And he got off his camel, walked up to this thirsty woman and asked, "Why don't you have a drink, ma'am?" And she looked up at the man with an exhausted, distraught expression across her face and tears welling up her eyes. "I'm dying of thirst. But there is way too much water here in this lake to drink. No matter what I do, I can't possibly finish it all. The passerby smiled, bent down, scooped some water up with his hands, lifted it to the woman's mouth and said, "Ma'am, your opportunity right now, and as you move forward throughout the rest of your life, is to understand that you don't have to drink the whole lake to quench your thirst. You can simply take one sip, just one small sip, and then another if you choose. Focus only on the mouthful in front of you, and all your anxiety, fear, and overwhelming about the rest will gradually fade." The moral of this story: when you start out solving a problem, the sheer size of it might overwhelm you. Keep in mind that to successfully solve it, you need to make the first step, and after that, take the next, and so on, until you are done. Very simple story, but a great message, isn't it? It is impossible to fill a full vessel until it's emptied. And this next writing speaks to doing just that. And while listening to this beautifully written story, ask yourself, to whom did this person go? My sense is that this wonderfully loving being is to the author's personal sacred heart. Her very soul essence knocks on the door to her greater spirit and finally reviews her old baggage, who expresses only love without recrimination. This is a great metaphor of setting heavy baggage on the table to open, of mending a damaged heart. And so I shall begin. Oops. I almost opened up the wrong one. Longing to exhale. Well, darn, I'm having a moment here. Give me a moment here. And wouldn't you just know, I have somebody on the other side of the wall from me who is doing a repair on our washing machine. So if you hear bumps and thumps, that's what's going on. Just a Nobody by Renee Volpe from Readsy.com. One day, wandering about as usual, I ended up in a street food market where I learned one of my most valuable lessons. I learned that self-examination is one of the hardest things humans can do, and that it takes a lot of effort to recognize and accept our faults. I felt invincible when growing up. Many of us think that way. What could go wrong when you're 19? We're foolishly unstoppable. We know nothing, and yet we believe we are so bright and so able that we can become too full of ourselves, much to our detriment later. My claim to fame was only the thought that I have my entire life ahead of me. Therefore, why worry? Every time I made mistakes, and they were constant, I'd go back to that premise almost to absolve myself of any responsibility. I took more chances than anyone I knew. I lived for the thrills and came out the other side relatively unscathed. Only later did I start questioning not only my life, but also my purpose. The thrills ceased to be what they once were, and I became increasingly disappointed in myself and everyone around me. I felt confused and anxious. I was looking for something I couldn't name, something that would satisfy my search for something I didn't know where to find. An old friend I grew up with turned me into the Krishna temple, as he was already a member, but I refused to adopt their methods. They required head shaving and begging for alms in the streets, all dressed like Hindu monks. But since the ideas were great, I decided it was something worth exploring. So I went at it alone. I started reading Eastern philosophy, the Vedas, the Mahabharata, and the Bhagavad Gita. I met a guru while wandering who turned out to be the most educated and eloquent man I've ever encountered up to that point. As we started a conversation, I told him of my predicament, and he pointed out that it would be best to let go of whatever I identified my persona with, considering my inquiry. Just let it go, he said. Become no one. That's your path. I tried to understand, but I couldn't. It was above my perception. How could I do that? He explained that I was already nobody. That in reality, I was nothing but a walking pretense. That all I do is repeat what I've heard somewhere. Nothing about me is original, except for two things. So I asked, already semi-offended, well, what are they? He leaned forward and uttered, that I cannot tell you. You will have to find them yourself. You were young and silly, thinking you were something or someone. Let it go. I complained that wasn't true. I affirmed I do have thoughts, ideas, and intentions, and stupidly added, people recognize me for my gifts, my presence, all that makes me who I am. You are a parrot, he continued. A boy like any other, except that you were curious. That's all. I was stunned at his blatant honesty. You discover something and you think it's you. You hear something and believe you have created it yourself, and you repeat it as such. But is it yours to claim? Think. Who gave you your name? It wasn't you. Who gave you an ID or a number? Not you. Did you school yourself? No. You went to a place of learning. Could you go after your own ideas? No. You followed others' behaviors and you settle for standards. These are the results. You are a carbon copy of millions like you who follow the rules and think they have agency. You don't. He said that we in this society label ourselves compulsively. It's demanded that we do. It's been taught since birth that we must become something important to show our value. But you already are. You don't have to become anything. You are the essence of divinity itself, just like everybody else. They teach you that to be somebody you must train yourself and pay a fortune. The more degrees, the better. And don't ask questions or you'll be singled out and mocked. It's a game, a trick, and a trap. More confused than ever, I interrupted him to ask, why is it a trap? Those degrees will help me with my future, better opportunities, and well-paying jobs. He smiled and said, you see those people working at fast food places? If you ask them, they'll tell you they have all kinds of titles and degrees and a massive amount of debt that will undoubtedly carry on until midlife or later. But in society's eyes, they become somebody. It's a trap. My head was spinning at that point. I needed to breathe badly. The man was right. I was a fool. One good thing, though, which should tell you you're yet to be born into you. I wanted to argue, deny his words, shout, and show him he was wrong, but my brain stopped me. I needed to digest what this wise man just told me carefully. I had enough presence to recognize much. I said goodbye, frustrated but refreshed, and I wanted to find a place alone to meditate on his advice. Was he right? Why did the last thing he say resonate so much? It was devastating to contemplate that I was a walking lie. How could that be? So what if I was like everyone else? I like that idea, but why does it matter? And then it hit me. That's the last thing I ever wanted, to be like the rest. I returned to him to tell him I always felt special, one of a kind and appreciated. Special? He asked. Looking deeply into my eyes, he questioned, "Are you empty?" Not knowing what he meant, I asked, "Empty of what?" "That's another secret you have to find out for yourself." "Okay, just please give me a hint." "I told you, you're nobody, but you think that's a bad thing." "It's the opposite. It's liberation, releasing all you believe you are." "What? Nothing. Do you want me to be happy about realizing I'm nothing?" "I didn't say nothing. I said nobody." "So an empty nobody, is that it?" His face suddenly illuminated like a full moon on the most transparent lake, and a smile crowned his expression. His silent response was all I needed to see. I walked away comfortable that finally I had said the right thing, and looking back to see if he was still there, he waved. Much later in life, I learned what he hinted at by saying that I already had those two original traits. He implied I harbored a humble heart and an easygoing soul. He told me so some 20 years later. Couldn't believe he remembered. I've always heard of enlightened masters who come into this realm to help humanity, and we rarely pay attention and dismiss them as charlatans. Although many fit that description, others are the real thing. The latter have nothing to sell you for a cash payment. I'll always remember my first guru, and I didn't even know his name. He was probably nobody. That was a delightful one, and I think you figured out that I picked up the wrong story there. So, oh my, here we go. Next, I will do Longing to Exhale by Skylar Page from Readsy.com. With tears streaming, I hesitantly packed everything I had in the nearest bag, all the worries and anxieties, the doubts and unbeliefs, the joy and pain, the love, grief and traumas and fears, the depression and wonder and hope. I tossed them all in and prayed for the best. With my heart in a sack slung over my shoulder, I begrudgingly made my journey. I hope someone had been listening as I called out, begging and pleading that I wouldn't be turned away, but welcomed with anything other than pity. I'd rather be rejected and turned away than to be accepted because of pity. I didn't need anyone's heart to go out for me. My heart was already gone, or at least most of it was. What was left of it sat restive in the bag on back, beating boisterously like an animal trying to escape its cage. That's how I'd always felt, like I was trying to escape a cage I'd been thrown into, a cage full of demons I'd been fighting for years with no luck and no one to help. Or maybe that wasn't quite true. Maybe there was someone on the other side of those silver bars waiting with a key, waiting for me to ask them to unlock the doors and let me breathe again. But the pride in my chest kept my lips sealed shut. I couldn't possibly ask someone to take on that task, not when I knew what it was like. I'd held the weight of those iron keys in my own hands one too many times, attempting to liberate the very people that held me captive. So I sat there like an animal in a cage with my wounds on display for an audience, unable to speak. I stood there silently as they clapped while I took blow after blow. Still, I couldn't ask the one holding the keys for help. How could I when I was scared of being free? Don't get me wrong, I hated the cage I'd been constrained to with every fiber of my being. But when you've been incarcerated for ages, the inside of those steel bars becomes home. It becomes routine, a sort of crutch, and the outside world becomes uncertain and unstable. In that cage, I knew what to expect day by day. I knew I'd be met with pain and torment. Outside, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what I'd be confronted with, and it terrified me. But lately, I'd been feeling like it was time for exposure therapy. It was time for me to breathe again. I had been holding my breath for far too long, and I didn't know how much longer I could continue on that way, and I knew I couldn't overcome what I refused to confront. So with weak knees and a heart that was barely beating, I walked up to the door and decided I was ready to breathe again. I decided I was ready to ask the person on the other side for help. Raised my fist and knocked on the old oak door. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe pity once they saw what I carried inside of my bag, or anger for bringing my ratty clothes and bloodied heart to their front step. But I was met with neither. The door opened, and we locked eyes. Bright eyes met my glistening gaze, and I was swept up into warm arms before I had a chance to present the reason for my sudden appearance. I was ushered into a home that smelt like autumn and love. I shifted my weight from foot to foot as my eyes caught the decades worth of endearment that lined the brown walls. My eyes stung as I wondered if I'd ever get the privilege of experiencing anything like what I was seeing in those pictures. I was ushered to a couch, and suddenly my words were caught in my throat. I contemplated remaining silent. I just came by to pay you a visit. I carry my bag and its contents back home and dump them in the corner of my cluttered room. I'd cover them back up and pretend they weren't there. Everything would go back to normal, to familiarity. But as coffee brewed and our knees bumped, my eyes welled up. The dam that I'd spent years building suddenly had given way, and I didn't know how I felt about it. Soft circles were rubbed on my back as I choked out the words I'd been dying to speak aloud. The words I'd only whispered to myself in the dead of night were suddenly floating around the air, and it felt good. It felt like the calm after last night's rain. Like a slow smile or long hug, like stepping out of the house at midnight to see the moon grinning down at you. It felt like the first exhale after being underwater, like I was finally breathing again. With shaky hands, I unloaded my bag on the table. I lay under the gaze of the god sent next to me. Once finished, I sat back with a deep sigh and waited for a response or reaction. I waited for a sign of regret, resentment, or repulsion. Once more, where I expected blazing flames, I was met with a gentle rain, a rain so soft and delicate that fell down and kissed all the places I'd been previously burned. Hand in hand, we sorted through the chaos on the table before us. Together, we tossed out the things that once diverted me from the troubles of my life. It was decided from thereon I would face things head on, no more distractions. I threw away all the things that plagued me at night or no longer served a purpose. All of my wounds were carefully tended to by the gentle hands that held mine. There were no reservations about the things that I'd laid bare on the table, only love and a devotion to help where needed. It was beyond admirable. When I was scared to dive into the deep end, my hand was held, and I was told that everything would be fine. And together we jumped. We dived headfirst into my problems and traumas and swam with everything we had in us until the waves were no longer beating us. At last, I glanced down into my hands at the heart that I now held as it beat steadily. It looked different than before, newer, softer, loved at last. A little used and slightly torn, covered in bandages, but still loved nonetheless. With delicate fingers, we placed it back where it should have been all along, where it should have never left. But sometimes that's the way things go. Sometimes things are placed where they shouldn't be, and they get bruised, broken, and occasionally stepped on. Sometimes valuable things are misplaced or ruined. They suffer wear and tear, and sometimes irrefutable damage. Sometimes things just don't go how they should, and everything gets chaotic and jumbled up. There's confusion everywhere, and everything is bleak and dark. The moon is hiding, and there are no stars in sight. Sometimes the nights are cold and painfully long, but then morning eventually comes, wrapped in a cardigan and a sunshine grin. The rain finally settles, and the stars count again to kiss you goodnight. The mess gets sorted out and the cage gets opened. You're greeted by kind eyes and love that knows no bounds. You exhale and pick up pieces of what used to be. You learn how to breathe again. I have to say that anybody who has even gone through parts of the dark night of the soul totally understands the writing that I just read. The willingness to throw your burdens on the table is a major first step. In our unique ways, we are then guided along, experiencing certain emotions, their causes. We realize that an intelligence takes us for a ride. We are the passenger. If we try to take the wheel and direct this vehicle of examination, the whole journey shuts down. It's been my personal experience that major life burdens to resolve come later, after one learns the rhythms, the patterns, of delving into these various emotions and causes. The lines of communication strengthen with our greater self. We learn teamwork, trust. Our overblown ego challenges at every turn, becoming familiar with how our ego can lure, entice, and flirt is another whole aspect of this process. In many ways, our healthful ego has become the domineering one, wanting total control, including of our soul. Little by little, these many challenges unveil, and ego takes its rightful place of mutual participation again. You have probably heard me refer to our inner child a time or two. And it was during these times of painful emotions flaring up, not needing a cause or necessarily needing to understand all of the ramifications, during these times that I began to realize how taking respite in the playtime as an innocent child becomes the salve while allowing those deep wounds to drain of their pain. This can begin in how to use imagination of learning to allow or to give permission and meanwhile to enjoy, to just sit on a hilltop and experience the wonders. Our inner child is no joke. You may find your inner child very bruised and battered too. This next one, I hope I have enough time here, is going to be right on, is I am a new leaf. I think I've got it here. And this one is by Cheryl Ann Ziomke, also a Reedsy.com. Change. Out with the old and in with the new, they say. I question this philosophy. What is wrong with the old if it is not broken? If it is broken, can you fix it to make it something new? How did it break in the first place? Did you break it or did someone break it for you? New from old from new, change. So the old saying, turn over a new leaf, is a new saying for me this year. Something old, something new. And no, I will not be getting married anytime soon. Although I do feel emotionally connected to someone, he does not seem to share the same emotions. Instead of crunching my feet on old leaves, I will try to walk barefoot on a new leaf. Mine, my new leaf. My new leaf is me. Learning what my desires are and what is stopping them. What my thoughts are, which I am realizing are mostly negative, and realizing those old dried leaves of the past have got to go. Out with the old and in with the new. These old dry leaves were broken in me. I did not do anything wrong. Now it will be up to me to grow a new leaf of my own. Ahead are new leaves of learning. What makes me happy and being kind enough to myself to allow those things to appear as a new leaf. Bright, happy, green, baby green. And no, I am not having a baby either. A new leaf of a new direction, a change. Change in color, change in professions, change in a private life. Heck, I might even change my Facebook profile picture. Change is a new leaf at first. Change can be fragile, like the new leaf on a tree or the fresh wings of a butterfly right out of a cocoon. Eventually, once you permit yourself to make one or two changes, by the third change, you might be selling your home and everything you own, picking up the cat and moving to Ecuador. And no, I am not moving to Ecuador. Most of, who I am is broken. The pendulum swings from a broken home as a child to a broken heart as an adult. I have grown used to feeling this brokenness around me and have learned to equate being broken with love. They hurt me, so they must love me, right? Change. That belief has to change and blow away with a gust of wind like in fall. A new autumn spring leaf of growth must come forth from the same tree. And that tree is me. The new leaf is me. interesting how shallow my roots have been all my life because of child abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, and even spiritual abuse. Today, as a 60-year-old woman, I stand like a tall oak tree with bare branches. The old, dried, crumbly, dead leaves are flying away to make room for new leaves. New leaves are sprouting from where the old, colored, dead leaves once were. These new leaves represent my own choices and not what others see in me or want me to be, but a new set of leaves for my life. It feels scary standing up for yourself as a woman in what feels like at times to be a man's world. My new leaves are what I choose. My choices. Where I live, what I do for an income, who I love, when I go to bed, when I wake up, and even how I dress. My life is my new leaf. My new leaf is me, myself, and I. My tree of life. Change is about choice. And there is no such thing as an unconditional change, for every change has a condition to be met before or after the change. You can change your mind about something, and even that change has conditions. I cannot think of an instant where a change would be unconditional. Can you? So here I dig deeply into the roots of my tree and the choices of change for my life. I wonder, will my tree with new leaves become home for a bird or a squirrel? Will one of my branches be used to tie an old tire so children can swing on it? Will a pair of lovers carve their initials in my bark? I wonder. My tree and my life. My choices on what I allow to live in and on my tree. I would like to believe that a child would pick my new bright green leaves and make a bracelet for themselves while they sit in the shade of my branches. And what an honor it would be to the rest of the forest of women when they see my new tree of life, when they learn I was able to shake loose the old dead leaves and choose new leaves for my life tree. They will be so proud. Deep will my roots go to discover the water of my ancestors. Their voices will shape new leaves, even if it only takes one voice. The words of that one voice could have the power to change my whole tree from leaves to roots. How wonderful is the freedom of letting go of the old and reaching the new leaf of change. Not the change of paper money to coins, but a meaningful change to last for a lifetime. So I will not be getting married, having a baby, or selling a house, or moving to Ecuador. No, Walter the cat and I will stay right here and resist the urge to change by way of self-destructing. Instead, choosing to grow my new leaves consciously, and through my subconscious, found with my new freedom, my newfound permission, and the new color of bright lime green. Cheers to my new life of change, the new change in me. Very good. And beyond being redundant, it was like this author, as she was writing, was setting it so that she was making her own affirmations. That's what it felt like to me. Joseph Campbell has this wonderful short quote. We must be willing to let go of the life we planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. Okay, I can see that I'm running a little shorter on time here. I'm going to do a couple of quotes. This first one is by Adia Shanti. Question your stories. Question your assumptions. Question your opinions. Question your conclusions. question them all into utter emptiness, stillness, and joy. The keys to freedom are in your hands. Use them. Unquote. I just realize right now I'm often amazed at how things get so well tied up together in my presentations. And here we were just mentioned the keys to freedom, which was a whole story that I just read to you. Here is another quick quote by Paulo Coelho. One day or day one, you decide. Thank you so much for joining Conversations with the Eagle Flower, and let's find where my eagle takes us next week. Bye for now.
We'll be right back after this message.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmic or sacred oracles of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Nikki.
And we sign up Sundays 2 to 4am Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plus animals. Fun, colors, insects. Take care. Cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about...